I don't even know what we're talking about.
we just assume
we have stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
We're just
recording.
Going into it.
We're recording. Yeah, we're going.
No, we are.
We are.
Recording
this is,
right
this
now.
Is it. I'm recording. This is out
Summer.
Now.
Nights. Nights.
Episode 9, I believe, on Nights, where we just recorded our Birdman episode, and I figured, why not go back into Interstellar? Because Abe and I knew we wanted to talk
about
a little
bit.
Yeah,
we had a lot to talk about, and we kind of had to hold our tongues because we didn't want to spoil it for anybody who hadn't seen it yet.
And we did have a good conversation about it regardless of that, so feel free to listen back to that episode, 171 for Interstellar. But now we can get a little bit more in-depth on our thoughts based on other things that happened in the film that we didn't want to previously reveal. And Jonathan, you're still here with us as well. And,
yes, he's back again.
And so
Jonathan's is back.
So before we get into like, hey, Matt Damon,
Damon's in the movie?
Let's go with some other things. John, I know you were a big fan. What did you think of Interstellar overall?
I think I'm having a hard-pressed time not to call it my favorite movie of the year. I am on the side that fell hook, line, and sinker for the emotional core of the movie. I actually think the beginning of the movie is really cool, while most people who seem to not like it are always like, it's great once they get out of America. I think Interstellar is kind of, I think it's better than Inception. I think, it has the emotional gravity that a Christopher Nolan movie sometimes lacks. And I think some people, I can get why they think maybe some of that's overwrought or a little too, I don't know, spelled out. But I bought in and I'm all about the reconnaissance, so. Interstellar, all right. Awesome.
All right. And so just to recap, like our thoughts, Abe liked the movie, certainly appreciated it.
No, I actually enjoyed it a lot. There are just some parts of it that the clunky parts that we'll get to is just what threw me off. But I liked it because it made me really want to go into space. It brought that sort of that youthful spirit out, and I think that it's something that kids should see. That's why I referenced Top Gun as my callback, because after that, a lot of people sign up for the Navy. It's like, hopefully people are going to sign up for NASA and work hard and become engineers.
And I certainly really enjoyed the film as well. I do. I would put myself in a very high opinion of the film in the positive regard. I do think there, neither Abe and I felt had issues with the kind of sentiment quality of it. I mean, we were into the emotional aspect of the film for sure as well. But yeah, I certainly really, really enjoyed the film. I loved seeing it in IMAX, and I will look forward to seeing it again, which I plan to in the near future. So yeah, all that out of the way. Let's get into some other thoughts on the film based on kind of where
jump
it goes, I guess. Let's jump into it. Abe, anything you want to bring up?
Absolutely. So the film, again, we talked about this. There are some strong parts, and then there was... I didn't watch the rest of the trailer. Somebody at work had told me that the trailer had the part where Anne Hathaway talks about love. But when that happens in the movie, I just thought, oh my God, like, you cannot be serious right now. You are going to tell me that this is going to be a huge part of the movie, isn't it? And it, sure enough, it was.
Well, that seems surprising, though. I mean, the emotional core is Matthew McConaughey's love for his daughter.
And his daughter, yeah. But just in terms of like, well, yeah, everything here was all scientific and it was cool. And then all of a sudden this concept of love where it's very powerful and it tells you that, you know, some things are right or wrong is going to come into play and make this huge impact at the end of the movie, which I thought was I just didn't like it as much. One of my first beefs.
I thought Anne Hathaway did a great job with that speech, and in lesser hands, I think that speech would have fallen off, but I thought the way that it did the real close take on her while she was doing it, and it wasn't like they ended up doing her plea to love, they actually did the more brutally efficient answer to that, so I was okay with that. If I'm going to... the hardest part to defend is probably just the getting, you know, the last part of McConaughey getting caught in the fifth dimension kind of thing. That's a little trickier.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually turned to my cohort after the movie and was like, I don't know if you would like this or not, because Yusama, he's more of a science person. And he's like, no, actually, he also kind of gave in to some of that more cheesy emotional core that we don't really see in Christopher Nolan movies often.
Which is something I was supporting about the film, the fact that he is trying to take those different steps to incorporate things that he's been criticized for in the past. As far as that segment of the film goes and kind of the way love is the answer to things, it didn't bother me. Like, it wasn't a, I can see where the dialogue is not like the strongest in those sections necessarily, but I do think Anne Hathaway provides a good enough performance to really kind of sell what the idea is there. Like, I never,
yeah, so wasn't so much a problem of her performance, but I think just the way that they were going about it, it didn't really catch me off guard, but it was just one of the situations where I didn't particularly want it to go that way, because of all the science that they were doing behind it.
Again, it was something a little heavy-handed, too. I mean, I don't know. It was probably the good thing is that he got a bunch of good actors in this movie, because
yeah.
Some of the material might not hold up as well if the orators weren't as good as they were.
I think that having, you know, the cast that he has and making things heavy-handed kind of comes with the territory. I think if you're making a movie on this scale where it comes to like something like Avatar too, where it's the story of, and it's not to compare the stories of this movie and Avatar, but I mean, Avatar, with that movie, the story's generic to the point where everyone can accept it and recognize it for ideally the other things it's doing. I don't think the story is trying to be anything revolutionary, because it seems obviously like it's not doing that. But because it's so easy to comprehend that story, it opens it up to being the number one film everywhere, because everyone can get a grasp on what's going on enough to admire so much else about that film. With Interstellar, I think by, you know, making sure that the points are really handed out to the audience, it makes it clear what you're trying to, what the filmmaker wants to see, so you can, I guess, appreciate the other aspects of that thing. And that maybe feels false on an emotional level or for whatever reason, but at the same time, you're never unclear about what's being presented to you because it's being heavy-handed. And that's not necessarily always the greatest way to go about things, but I feel like the scale of this movie requires that in some senses.
Yeah. And just to close out that thing, so John, you brought it up too, which is the movie turns back because it says, by the way, Anne Hathaway, you're a scientist. You should know better than this. So we're not going to go with your plan. We're going to go with the plan that is the most logistically easy to accomplish and what makes the most use of our time. Because he's already spent 20-some-odd years, 23 years, on away from Earth, which is very sad.
A theory of relativity is so awesome.
I agree, yeah.
It is so awesome to think about. And, I mean, We've talked about this. I think sometimes in these type of movies, I can get swept up in the ideas that it presents enough that, like, the movie doesn't even matter. Cough. Transcendence. Cough.
You're quite positive on that.
I know. But I just... It's, I mean, that's so crazy. There's so many things that just happen when they come back and the guy's like, I think they do a great job of subtly illustrating certain things. Like, when they come back and he's like, didn't think you were coming back, and there's just that right. small scene, but you could just feel like, yeah. Man.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, what's cool about that too is just like, I didn't think you guys were going to come back. I was starting to lose hope. I even went to hypersleep for years, and here I am. And then, again, that's where the first emotional toll takes a hit, because it's like, you know, we've been gone for 23 years. There's tons of messages for you. And Matthew McConaughey, like, sells the shit out of that stuff, because I was really, really sad. And It was getting kind of misty in that theater. And it was just a heart-wrenching thing to go through, because the first video is just his son. And then the second one is, like, his son and a girlfriend now. And then he gets married. And then it's like all this time has passed, and it's really a bummer. And then the video with Murph just saying, like, you said you're gonna be back by the time we're the same age, and here we are, and you're not here. Yeah. It's just,
I never would even thought so that's difficult. Such a good screenplay, drop that earlier, and then, like, you would never would have been like, oh, they're gonna bring that up again.
Yeah,
Like, boom. And then
dropping the
Casey Affleck does such a good job of being like, I'm done, too. Like,
so that's something that I want to bring up. And Aaron, I'd like to hear your opinion on it, because we talked about it during the regular recording.
Yeah.
And it was I kind of was wondering why his character maybe have turned away from his father and stopped supporting him, because they seemed like they were pretty close. And I kind of wanted to hear a little bit more or know more about their
characters. The thing. I don't think he did stop supporting his father. I think he realized that he can't keep putting an emotional investment into video recordings to a person that he just hasn't seen for a majority of his life. But at the same time, he's not leaving that house because of his father. He wants him to come back. He wants everything to go back to where it was. He wants to be able to keep this legacy going of the Cooper family or whatever.
Yeah.
That's why I think Casey Affleck does a very good job of this film, where he doesn't get a lot to say or a lot to really work with. You get just enough to realize that this is a guy who's had a troubled life because his father left him. And while he's not the most important character next to the daughter, who's clearly more important, but you get this guy who's clearly lived his own life, who is now struggling with making that work. And he's dealt, you know, with his own, you know, death, and his own child died before he had another child. I mean, there's a lot of dark thing that's happened. But at the same time, it still is coming down to he's staying in this house. He's like, he's been left on pause because his father left him. And I really respond to that. I thought that was, for, you know, the movie, for being heavy handed in a lot of instances, I enjoyed that kind of level of subtlety with a minor character.
Yeah, you literally just completed what I was going to jump in on, which is I heard people complaining about the lack of use of the son, and I actually went the opposite direction and thought it was really expertly done what we saw of him, and like how fully realized his character was, considering we didn't jump in on him as much and just kind of got peeks or to see what, you know, checking in with him more so. And of course, there's obviously the parallel of, yeah, kind of in some ways, Murph didn't believe, the son did, and then like they kind of flip roles toward the end of the movie almost, which is interesting.
That's a good point.
Too.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
What were some of your gripes?
The Matt Damon stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we talked.
That one,
this is where we were doing a lot of heavy allusions
to.
So,
exactly. So we were really, really tiptoeing around this because I didn't read the poster, so I didn't know he was in there.
He's not in the poster.
But right when he showed up, I was like, God fucking damn it. there's a problem here. And I didn't like the way that they progressed through that problem. There was a lot of interesting things that he says during the time that they were together, because he brings up questions of why we couldn't just send robots out, and it's like, well, it's the human will is really strong.
Yeah,
and you know, we look to survive. And then Matt Damon's thing was all about survival. So I'd like to hear your introductory thoughts, because there's some theories that I want to ask you guys about too.
Well, I'll put it this way. Matt Damon being in the movie does not bother me. I love that he's in this movie, and I love where it goes in that. It's more of the point where we get to Matt McConaughey and Matt Damon just punching each other. It's like, do we need this? Like, that's
silly,
where,
right?
It's like, yeah. I'm just watching Man of Steel now. Like, I don't need this. It's him like emerging from the pod and crying and all that. I love that. And I love that you can cast Matt Damon. I think I kind of alluded to this, but you cast Matt Damon because you don't need character. You don't need more to develop a character. Aside from like talented Mr. Ripley, Matt Damon plays heroic people. He plays people that you kind of look up to, you can kind of respect and understand the kind of gravity he brings to some kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. Similar to, I think I alluded to this, George Clooney in Gravity. You don't need to develop his character that much because he's Clooney. Like, you get who he is for the most part without having to do too much work. I think Matt Damon's at that point where you can kind of get that same sense from him as well. So it helps that he's also duplicitous, where you end up not being able to trust this person, but at the same time, getting him initially, it's like, oh, okay, cool. I don't need anything else to know who Dr. Man is. I just know he's Matt Damon. He's the best of us, as Anne Hathaway described him.
Right.
I understand that. And so then hearing him talk about all these things, it makes me a little suspicious, because it's like, this seems a little perfect. I know the movie has like another like hour and a half, and it's like, where is this going? So
I mean, I got suspicious when he was saying, yeah, if you go beneath the surface, I was like, the entire planet is frozen. The clouds are frozen, and you're telling me like at beneath this, there's this huge, you know, flora and fauna that we can use to survive.
That's where my eyes were like, so when are we seeing this part of the thing? I was like, when's that happening? All right.
Yeah, it's like, the readings are amazing. And then again, they get into their fights, and I just thought that was, I didn't enjoy that.
Cause I get where that scene's coming from. I get the thing, but at the same time, it's like, well, this is just like Sunshine or Event Horizon now. It's like, all right, well, you get the the guy goes crazy and tries to fight back and bad things happen from that. It's just, it felt, for a film that was awing me with a lot of stuff I haven't seen before, that was a scenario where it was like, well, I've seen this part before, so I'm a little less impressed by this. But at the same time, it does lead to that very exciting kind of spaceship chase where he's trying to dock with the thing, and the thing doesn't happen. Like, all that stuff I thought was, it brought me right back into it.
Like, and then you mentioned during the podcast that, like, yes, that was a great, like, sort of comeuppance scene. Like, it was fine what happened to him. And I thought that was really fine, too. That was actually, it kind of caught me off guard. I kind of shook my seat a little bit.
But, John, do you have any thoughts on the whole kind of Matt Damon
sequence?
I mean,
I really went dark on this movie, so I was, completely.
I mean,
you didn't even have to go completely dark.
That was a surprise for, I think, everybody.
But you're just, oh, snaps, like, Damon's in the house. You're just like, all right. It does give a regal kind of tilt to everything. It's like backing up the hype of what characters said, kind of with a casting almost. His character's interesting. I think because he's playing off type, as you said, it kind of works in a different way than maybe that character would normally. Because you're kind of like, we want to trust Matt Damon.
Yeah, if it was like Mark Strong, who plays British villain and everything, you would know that something's up. But, like, it's Matt Damon, so it's like a little different.
Matt Damon? Yeah. I looked over at my seat number, I was like, dude, it's Matt Damon. So here's a question I had for you guys, which is something that we discussed afterward at quite a length with the group that I saw it with. Is Matt Damon, did his character, did he... What did you guys think was his reasoning for, I guess, doing everything that he had to do?
Turning evil?
I don't know about turning evil, but he was just quite selfish.
Seems evil.
He was quite selfish in his quest to go back home?
Because he's a coward.
See, he was either going back home or he was going to go colonize it himself.
No, he said he was going back home. That's what he said. Because he was a coward. He became a coward. And it was from
being there for so many years by himself and contemplating on it, he realized that,
the measure
he spent with himself realized he didn't want to die.
And the measure of his success is being regarded as, one of the greatest, people ever, the scientist that can do no wrong or whatnot, matched with the fact that he was, wrong about what he set out to do, or he's at least unsuccessful in doing so. It just made him afraid and it made him cowardice. And
so that's kind of where I'm driving at this, which is he firmly believed, he knew, because Michael Caine's character has told him that, hey, look, there's no way that the Earth is going to survive, and you have to go through and find a home planet for us. So in doing so, he gets to that planet, he realizes there's nothing there, he falsifies all the data, and then is he just going to leave and go back to Earth?
That's what he said he's going to do.
But the question is, why? I mean, I guess he's going for the glory of coming back to Earth and being like, hey, by the way.
No, he's going because he'll be back with people. He'll be back in a society he can understand and control in his own way. Like, he'll get something out of that. He can't get anything out of being alone on a planet.
Yeah, and I get that. But if he knows that the planet is going to be, it's over, like, the Earth is done for, why would he go back? Or is he just trying to go to another planet?
He at least has some... Well, I mean, there's layers after that, after he arrives on Earth, if he can go back out again or something, I'd imagine. But at the same time, going back at least means he has somewhere to go back to. He has nothing to look forward to if he stays on Ice Hoth.
I said that to my friend, too. Like, it's Hoth. anyway.
There's nothing there for him. There's at least something there for him on Earth.
Right, and he can just build a fabricated reality of what happens.
Yeah, exactly. He can tell
that
story
he was
going to
do, right? And which is kind of a bummer, because I don't know why they had to kill off one of those guys. He had to create a bomb just to blow Raleigh, somebody up.
He already had the bomb. He created the bomb just because he can both get rid of his robot and no one can check on his data.
Yeah,
I mean, it worked out that way, where whoever rescued him blew up
from that. Right, and then he would have the ship to go away.
Yeah.
Speaking of robots, Christopher Nolan movie and jokes. What?
Those jokes are funny.
I mean, if you forget that there's lots of comedy in Inception and all the Batman movies, I mean, sure, but those movies are really funny.
Tarz is a great guy. I wanted to meet that guy. I wanted to, like, hang out with him, have, you know, drinks while he drinks motor oil or something.
I mean, at least four characters in Inception are all comic relief.
The chemist?
Tom Hardy, the chemist, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I mean, they're making fun. And all those Batman movies, I'm never, you know, just sitting
there, not smiling.
They're all really there. I mean, Morgan Freeman's there.
Do you know how to
drive
a stick? Yeah. Batman for you, to Lieutenant Gordon.
I've gone on saying I could listen to the Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman variety show for hours, all the stuff they're talking about those movies.
One thing that I did find interesting about Interstellar was that Anne Hathaway was right. It was kind of it was a sad realization. And I was kind of bummed out when she arrives to the planet. You know, her boyfriend slash, you know, loved one, he's dead because there's nothing that he can do. But she's there with the eggs and the...
But why was her boyfriend gone?
We don't know what the case was. I mean,
yeah,
I imagine that's...
I'm surprised that they went that direction since there didn't seem to be any reason he wouldn't have been okay in that planet.
Well, yeah. that was the thing, though. We only knew so much about what that planet was, and I mean, I don't know if it was a time-related thing or what, but yeah, obviously, you know, something happened. But what I like, what makes it interesting of Anne Hathaway being right, it's like, well, if they did choose that the first time, though, would things have been able to have happened the way they did?
Meaning, like, would he have been able to solve the fifth dimension?
He wouldn't have got there.
He would have never actually...
And they wouldn't even got to be able to solve Plan A. They'd only have Plan B.
Yeah, which is repopulating.
It's a kind of... It goes into the time travel paradox.
Right.
I mean, it's like, how do... Paradox. Yeah, I mean, how do we get a wormhole to begin with if we haven't been there before? Like, it's...
Yeah,
it's
a good point.
Kind of cross your eyes questions, and how do you get to that point if you don't go to the wrong planet first before going to the right planet?
But, I mean... So, I enjoyed that part of it. And I know, John, you might have had some issues with the fifth dimension part. At first, I was thinking, wow, I don't know how black holes work, but I don't know if you'd survive. But this is a neat concept here.
It's all theoretical. So
yeah.
It's like,
right. No, just like the whole entire concept of...
constructing the fifth dimension. I don't know. See, that's what's funny. I was like, why do people care about the inaccuracies or going too flight of fancy? I don't know. Like I said, favorite movie of the year, probably.
Yeah.
It is kind of, if you're going to complain about anything, though, I guess it'd be like, how will we do it? We're just to assume that the people figured out how to, like, do something in the fifth dimension, build something.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a little bit wild, but it's
cool. I enjoyed it. That part really, really made me think and ponder about things beyond... I don't know, our visibility. And that's why I really, really enjoyed this movie. Like, I thought that was just neat how time and space is like a physical concept in the fifth dimension. And then just playing with it, because I found it weird that he was stuck in that one moment. I guess he's seeing the entire time frame of Murph growing up and whatever else, but he's stuck in that room behind that bookcase. And I found it quite convenient for him to send Morse code through time space, and then also just have it tick in a clock or in a watch, because I would think that that would be millions of things that she has to decode and decipher. But she did it, and I'm glad, because that was
she's a scientist, so that's what they do. Yeah. I don't deny the convenience factor. I mean, those are the little things that like keep me from like overly loving the movie. Is just like, there's a little convenience in having that take place and having...
Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson thinks it holds up better than most movies.
Yeah,
that's
and
great
I
for
think,
him.
Yeah,
and... yeah, that's him. I'm glad he does.
No, I read somewhere that he also thinks that the science is much better, but the convenience factor was a little bit strange. Even though I know that the movie had to end at some point, it was just that, wow, I'm going to help you solve space-time. by sending it to you, and I hope that you get this watch. I hope that you realize that it's in the watch, and she realizes it's in the watch. She solves it. She figures it out. I love the shot where the two space rovers are coming to get him, though. Like, after they solve it, and everything's kind of in all present, all now, and you see the two space rovers, he's just floating there in space, which is... It was a pretty neat thing to see, and again, in 70mm IMAX, it was just so vast, and it was pretty great.
I agree with that, yeah. I mean, that the sense of awe that I got from these scenes, that's what kept me going through the whole third act, because I really liked that.
Water planet's insane.
Oh, yeah, visually speaking, I mean, the movie
was
awesome.
Insane, yeah. I mean, go ahead.
I just stick on that point, I mean, that the only, not issue, but the only thing I kept wondering is, like, I don't exactly know how Jessica Chastain could go 2 + 2 = this. I don't know where that moment really came from beyond, like, cause he's just kind of staring at something for a long time. It's like, oh, I get it now. Like, I don't quite know how that clicked together, but it didn't hinder my acceptance of it too much.
Agreed. So I wasn't so much caught up, cause she sort of alludes to it earlier when she's asking Michael Caine, like, hey, you know, did you ever think about changing this variable for time? He's like, no, don't worry about it. Like, I've already done everything I can. Like, I'm kind of tired right now. But, you know, I get that she's, like, on the cusp. And because she has some aided effort from her father, she's able to solve it. So I kind of gave it that pass.
So, yeah, Water Planet, cool.
The Water Planet was cool.
Dude, that's like my nightmare, man. Yeah. This wave on the planet. Ugh.
So the thing that we were wondering is, and this is just like a comical thing, was the surface of the water, or the surface, I mean, I'm sorry, the depth of it is maybe like 2 feet, right?
Yeah.
But the tidal wave is thousands of stories tall. So we were thinking, does that mean that the entire planet is constantly in this giant, like, tidal wave all the time? Because... the surface, again, is only 2 feet.
Well, the surface around them in that proximity is 2 feet. We don't know
what the surface
is like.
Because the tidal wave is why it's so shallow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Exactly. Thank you, John. Yeah, it's shallow because there's a giant wave coming at them.
good call.
There's been a recession in the tide here because there's a giant wave on the way.
I like that, yeah.
So, you know, on the other side of the planet, maybe it's, you know, super fucking deep. I don't know. And I'm sure Jonathan and Christopher Nolan have, you know, a very detailed sketch about how this planet works, but we only got what we needed.
Yeah, possibly the biggest bummer death there. That guy really got screwed over.
Oh, Wes Bentley?
Wes Bentley?
He went out with a full beard, though, so good on him.
Yeah, I liked him in there, and I thought that it was a bummer about the way that he had to exit the movie.
Yeah, I was why is Anne Hathaway gets there last, but he's the one?
Yeah, I was like, dude, what are you doing? Just get back to the ship. Tars is going to go get Anne Hathaway.
You know what? You know why, guys? Love.
Love.
Cool.
It's kind of
love and math.
And I just realized, even though I saw him in, I think he's in The Hunger Games.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah, beard.
He's the boy from American Beauty, right?
Yeah, we all know that, John.
Videotaping the bag and saying there's so much beauty everywhere. And it's like, dude, it's just a bag.
Yeah, we all know that he's from American Beauty.
He's got the best piece of ass in 3 states or something. That's what his line was to Chris Cooper.
Sure, you can make up lines. I know you're not. I know this were the movies.
I don't know. I'm in the tank forever. I think everything worked for this movie for me. I mean, I don't know. I saw it in 35mm, not quite what you guys saw it in, but...
Well, if you love it so much, you should see it again in giant IMAX and get a little bit of that.
Yeah.
You're all about the IMAX.
It was a really good experience, and I think that that's kind of what adds to it, especially when they're floating right by Saturn, and they're so small, and the planet is huge, and you can kind of get a sense of...
I love scenes like that.
...how small we are. Yeah.
Like, Sunshine does that a lot. Sunshine, I mean, that's not it's hugely expensive. You haven't seen Sunshine?
I missed it in the...
I haven't seen it in theaters. Okay.
So...
Well, it's a good Blu-ray, but even then, yeah, seeing it, I mean, it does things like that with a sense of scale that are impressive.
Right.
Gives you kind of an understanding of how much of a microcosm we are in all of this.
Yeah, and it was really neat just to see Interstellar in that format. And then also when they're going through the wormhole and you see the blurs and everything like that, and the secret handshake that she and Matthew McConaughey have, And then also just going through the black hole as well. Like, all that visual melding was really neat to see in a huge screen, because I was really into it. And then when he gets to the fifth dimension and you just see all these, I guess they seem like shadows of each other, or, you know.
Yeah, I love the kind of the way it brings together all that's going on as you slowly understand, like, okay, you're in this infinite library now.
Yeah, infinite is the right word. Yeah, it's like this infinite visual sequence. And this is a really neat thing to see, because, again, I don't know what's out there. I don't think anyone really does. But if you can sort of make us imagine it and make us think about it, and hopefully it triggers somebody to, you know, go study it and become this code breaker, fantastic. More power to you. I'm too old for that. I'm like Danny Glover.
So with all that, I think we've talked enough about Interstellar spoilers.
Spoilers.
John, thanks for sticking in with us and going a little deeper.
Into space.
My pleasure.
And I'm glad we all got this off our chest. Things we had to say.
Damn it, Matt Damon.
Yeah, exactly. Matt Damon.
So, yeah. I would have been funny if they had a cameo from Ben Affleck at some point, just because.
Now they had Casey Affleck. What do you want?
That's true. They did have Casey. Like,
what do you need? What else do you
need? The Caster. I do like Casey a lot.
Ben Affleck and Matt Damon made like 4 movies together, and they've both been in like 30 plus movies. Move on.
Whoa! Hot take.
All right. I think that's a good way to end Out Now Nights. So, until the next episode of Out Now Nights, where we go over the mysteries and conveniences of a little film called Paddington, I think that's going to take us to the end here. So, until next time, so long.
And goodbye.